Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Web Sleuths Radio. My name is Tricia Griffith. I am the very, very proud owner of WebSleuths.com, one of the very best true crime discussion forums in this entire universe. If you ask me, I will tell you that. Tonight we're going to discuss a case that has got the world, it's got the world's attention because it is so horrific. Chris Watts, a husband and father, is accused of killing his pregnant wife and his two little girls, 3 and 4 years old, but not only killing them, taking them to an oil field and dropping his wife in a shallow grave, and then taking his two little girls and dropping them in an oil well. It's disgusting. It's repulsive. But there is something really different here because Chris Watts is saying, hold on, everybody, don't judge me. I came home and my wife had killed my two daughters. And I went into a blind rage, and I killed my wife. Now, a lot of people don't believe that. It does sound a little contrived, but you know what? Well, it just depends on what the jury thinks. That's the deal here. It doesn't matter what we think. All those 12 people on that jury, that's what's going to count. And tonight, I am so proud to welcome incredible guests from all over. We have Levi Page from the podcast Crime and Scandal. We also have Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, and for the first time on our show, one of our most loved members on Web Sleuths. She is a verified attorney on Web Sleuths, and it's Hitana One. And I'm going to start with Hitana One, because Hitana One, I know you've been working, gathering all of the paperwork up, so you can tell us exactly what is he charged with, what are some of the lesser charges. I'm just going to turn the floor over to you for a moment, okay?
Okay, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited. It's my first time, and hopefully I won't do a Cindy Brady on the television show and kind of just freeze talking to a national audience on the podcast.
Just stare at the microphone. No, you'll be great. You'll be great. Don't be worried.
Yeah, you know, I have been investigating this case a lot, investigating or researching rather, and gathering a lot of information, and I can tell you that I've been doing it so much that my own work has suffered a little bit, so I've been having to put in some kind of all-nighters in order to catch up on my own stuff. So my work has suffered because I've been so obsessed with this case, which is really an astounding case. And this is a case that caught my attention, and I began following it on Web Sleuth, actually, before the mainstream media even reported on it. And there was a little blip, because we're really not supposed to do that on Web Sleuth. So there was a little pause while, the Web Sleuth tried to control that a bit and said, wait, I don't know if we can actually have a thread on a case that's not been reported in mainstream media. But Web Sleuthers, as usual, were on it immediately. And it's one of the cases that I happened to be on from the very, very outset. And from the very beginning of this case, you just had this sense, uh-oh, this is going to be very, very bad. This is going to be a horror of a case. And, of course, as we're finding out now, it's true. The charges, there are several charges. And let me just get to what I have here, because I think it's important to talk about how the state of California, from what I research, and caveat, I'm not a criminal attorney in the state of Colorado. I do minor criminal appearances and things, sometimes assist my law partner in criminal matters in California, but primarily what I do is family law. So that's my caveat, but I think I really have a handle on what's going on with the Colorado law here. And the crimes in Colorado are sort of separated by different felony classes. A class one felony would be the most serious, and that's punishable by life imprisonment or the death penalty. Mm-hmm. A class 2 felony is punishable by 8 to 24 years in prison. And then we've got class 3 felony, which is a possible prison sentence of 4 to 12 years. And there's been some discussion on the threads about when you're sentenced for one of these crimes, if there's multiple counts, can they be sentenced concurrently or consecutively, meaning that
mm-hmm.
there's, let's say there's three counts of a count three felony for Chris Watts, which there is, and I'll get into that in a second. If there is, can he be sentenced up to 12 years on each count for a total of 36 years consecutively? And that is
mm-hmm.
a possibility. It's something that I don't see all the time, but it is something that's possible. So let's get into what he's been charged with. And
okay.
Let me get back to that. I just got out of that. He has been charged with, let's see, five counts of murder in the first degree. Okay, and that's the Colorado, I think, code section 18-3102, subsection 1A for three charges, and then subsection 1F for two. And those
well,
are
wait, there's only, there's, let me, I'm sorry to interrupt here, but there's only four people if you count the fact that Shanann was pregnant. That's one, two, and then the two girls, three, four. How can there be five murder charges? I'm confused.
Yeah, so in Colorado, they do not, there is not a charge for murder for a fetus. They don't
okay.
have that. That was something that the legislature tried to pass and was unsuccessful. And we can get into that in a moment because there's another charge that kind of touches on that issue. But what
mm-hmm.
it is the first three counts of murder that he's been charged with, they are murder in the first degree with intent and deliberation. And for all of us, you know, that don't know the law well, that just means it's premeditated. So he's been
mm-hmm.
charged with premeditated murder for his wife and the two small children. And then the second two counts, which are subsections 1F, those are knowing murder of a child that hasn't yet attained the age of 12. And so
mm-hmm.
I can give you an example of that. It could be
okay.
what would normally be a second-degree murder charge, let's say, or even something more minor. For example, a parent beats a child to death. They don't really mean to beat the child to death or to kill the child, but they do mean to
mm-hmm.
abuse the child, and they know what they're doing. So that
mm-hmm.
would be a typically a second-degree murder, a voluntary manslaughter kind of charge in many states. In the state of Colorado, if a person kills a child in a manner like that, where they're not, it's not premeditated, they're not planning to kill this child, but something they do knowingly that is a danger to the child, that risks the child's life, it results in the child's death. In Colorado, if that child is under the age of 12, then that bumps it up to murder in the first degree. So now you're taking a second-degree murder charge and bumping it up to a first-degree murder charge, which is a Class 1 felony punishable
mm-hmm.
by so it gives an alternate theory, at least for the two children. If somehow the jury decides that, hey, it wasn't premeditation, this was kind of a heat of passion, there was no deliberation or intent, it doesn't matter. If they find that he killed the two little girls, he's still going to be found guilty of murder in the first degree on counts 4 and 5.
Murder.
Does that make sense?
And is murder in, yes, it does. And does murder in the first degree in Colorado, does that include the death penalty?
It does.
I think it does.
Yes, it does, and there's been a lot of discussion about that on the threads. It really has not nobody has been put to death in Colorado for decades, I believe it is, and I think sleuthers who call in will probably have more information on that than I do. But it's really kind of meaningless because it's even if he's sentenced to death, it's highly unlikely that he's ever going to be put to death. And,
exactly.
Yeah, and I think there's a good chance that eventually Colorado could do away with that entirely. But for
mm-hmm.
me, I think why a death penalty case is important is because of where they are placed. And in certain states, like Arizona, when we looked at the Jody Arias case, the prison she would have gone to if she'd been sentenced to death, her life there would have been horrific compared to
mm-hmm.
where she's at in general prison. And I'm not, I don't know anything about what that's like in Colorado, if there's a difference, but that is one reason to want a sentence of death, even if you think that the person isn't ultimately going to be executed. Okay,
I see.
So he is facing the death penalty for five counts. And and then we've got this count six, which is unlawful termination of pregnancy in the first degree. And there's been a lot of debate on Web Sleuth
about,
yes, because it seems very, very confusing. And let me see if I can put the language so I can show why it seems confusing. The language is that a person commits the offense of unlawful termination of pregnancy in the first degree if with the intent to terminate unlawfully the pregnancy of a woman, they do so, essentially. And it is a class three felony, but it becomes a class two felony if the woman dies as a result of the unlawful termination of a pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
So this really freaked people out because the way they're reading it, people assumed, wait a minute, it looks like he performed an abortion on her and killed her because he was trying to get at the baby. Kind of like that horrible case of the young woman who was murdered when some crazy woman came to her door and cut the fetus out of her.
Right.
Well, that's not the case. The district attorney in this case gave a press conference about the charges, and he was pretty clear. And essentially, the thought is that this particular charge kind of is, it's like a backup for the charge that they don't have in Colorado, where he could be charged for murder of the fetus. So this is a kind of a backdoor way at getting at that. And what this charge indicates to me is that the district attorney felt that Chris Watts intended to kill both Shanann and her unborn child. He didn't want the pregnancy. That's why, in part, why he killed Shanann. So it's a kind of a terrible use of a term, but he was killing two birds with one stone.
And exactly.
And if you set aside the act of killing Shanann or intending to kill her, if you just set that aside for a moment, it's essentially he wanted to end the life of the baby. He did not want this child. This is the theory under which he's charged. And so he made sure that baby wasn't born by killing the mother. So the termination of pregnancy, the mechanism was by strangling the host, essentially, the mother.
Right,
and
the mother.
And she, of course, died because he also my phone is blinking. And so as a result of that, this becomes a class two felony because she died as a result of his intent to end the life of the baby.
To kill the baby. Understood.
Yeah.
And
it's confusing. Kitana, what is,
it is a bit confusing, but you're doing a great job at explaining it. And Gitana, I'll come back to you in just a moment.
Sure.
I want to go to Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, one of our dear friends. We love her and truly a tremendous human being. Cheryl, I admire what you do so much. You do so much for so many people, and you never, ever even ask for a thanks. So I'm going to say publicly thank you for all you do, Cheryl. Now, Chris Watts claims that his wife, you're welcome, that his wife had killed his two kids. Do you believe any of this? And tell us what your opinion is of Chris Watts. It looks like this was a normal family. What do you think?
I don't believe any of it.
Cheryl, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me? I'm here.
Yeah, I can hear you. If you could just talk a little bit louder, that'd be great. Okay, go ahead.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear
me? Yes, I can.
Okay. Yeah, I don't.
I can hear you. Can you hear me? Yes.
Except when he said he murdered his wife by strangulation. That I believe. And it's funny to me because again, the autopsy hasn't been released. Nobody's talked about a manner of death, but he gave you the manner of death of the two girls. He gave you the manner of death of his wife, and I think that's critical. And I think we need to focus on that because if you look at what he says occurred in that house and then what was in that house, you should have a whole lot of questions. For example, if this was, I looked up on this monitor and saw my wife killing our children, and in a rage I killed her, that does not explain at all why the pillowcases were in the trash can. Why would he get
really?
Rid of the pillowcases? Yeah.
Right, that makes sense.
Why would that happen? Why would he mm-hmm. then immediately, realizing what he does in a fit of rage, hide all three of those bodies in such a grotesque manner? Why would he cover something up when he had at least some legal excuse for doing what he did? Because it was a lie.
Yes,
it's
easily exactly.
shown that it's a lie. I mean, it's going to be mm-hmm. able to be shown forensically. The crime scene has been staged. His statement to people. I mean, when he says that the little girl, he says something in past tense for like she was going to start kindergarten. Now at this
mm-hmm.
point, they're still missing, but he says she was going to go to kindergarten.
Was
next
past
Monday,
tense
meaning she ain't going next Monday. Well, how the hell does he know that she ain't going next Monday?
Good point. He was leaking his truth.
Mm-hmm.
And Cheryl,
absolutely.
I'm sure you picked up on what Chris Watts was doing from the very beginning. Did you see any of his interviews when his wife
yes.
and girls were missing? It was
yes.
very unsettling. What did you think?
Here's what leaked out at me in the very beginning is what he's wearing. He's got on sandals, athletic shorts, and a University of Carolina shirt, right?
Mm-hmm.
He clearly is not going and searching for these people. He's not going into the woods. He's not going through creeks. He's not driving around. He's at home chilling in what he would wear any Saturday game day. He talks
right.
more about, oh, this is my favorite jersey. This is my favorite college team. If my two children and my husband were missing, do you think I was going to give a damn about the University of Georgia at that moment?
No,
but that's
no.
what he's talking about, standing there.
Mm-hmm.
And here's
that,
the other thing, that people, they take offense sometimes when I say it, but dadgummit, it is the truth. Nobody turns into a complete piece of shit at 34 years old.
Right,
there
there's had to be something
to
before that.
School with that man, middle school with that man, and high school with that man that saw behavior that was antisocial, that was selfish and jealous and a little mean-spirited. This is not something that is completely, oh, we just never saw it coming. Yes, you did.
Mm-hmm. And, Cheryl, that's interesting that you bring that up because I've talked to a few people that kind of knew him, didn't know him very well, but they all had great things to say about him. I have yet to read anything, and it might be out there now, but I've yet to read anything that says, yeah, he was really a jerk in high school and what a scumbag. But no, you're right. And I think that's going to be my new motto is you don't turn into a piece of shit at 34. Really, I'm going to just have that tattooed on me. I love it. But it's true. And Levi Page, you are the host of Crime and Scandal. You've seen so many cases. And this is almost textbook of the husband lying. It's like Scott Peterson all over again, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's actually T-shirts that are made that say the husband did it, because in most cases, that's what happens here. I mean, how many cases have we seen where a wife finds out that her husband is having an affair, so she decides to strangle the children? That does not even make sense. I've never seen that in, like, 10 years of covering criminal justice, that scenario happen ever. But it's always the husband. And for a reason, it happens in so many cases. We see it with Scott Peterson and a ton of other cases. They're having an affair. They want the children out of the way. They don't want the problems of going through with a divorce where they have to divide assets and figure out custody of the children. So they think that murder is an easier option, and it almost always backfires on them because they're so narcissistic and self-centered that they only think in the short term. They don't think in the long term that, you know, you're going to leave evidence behind that's going to connect you to this murder and your plan is going to crumble to pieces because they're so self-centered and so narcissistic. And this guy was giving interviews while he knew where the bodies of his family was at, and he was very nonchalant about it, you know, like it was just no big deal. People noticed that from the very beginning, and he was talking about how empty the house was without them in there. Like, who says that when their family is missing? Wouldn't you be out there searching for them and raising awareness to get this case media coverage? Because, like it was mentioned earlier, this was not a huge story right when it first went missing, but wouldn't you try to make it be a national story if you were in his shoes? And that's what most people would be doing. They would not be sitting at home thinking about how empty the house is without, you know, his family. That's somebody that has killed them, knows they're not coming back, and is resigned to that fact. That's the kind of thoughts that a killer thinks after they kill their family, not somebody who is trying to find out where their family is.
Can I jump in on that for a second? Because
sure, this
I
is Kitana One from Web Sleuth. Go ahead.
Yes.
And then we'll go to
this
Cheryl.
Is something, yeah, sorry about that. This is something that's really, really astounding. Because if we look at this case and what happened from the beginning, just like Levi said, when people have family, loved ones missing, they're on it. They're the first ones who are calling the police. They're going door to door. They're absolutely freaking out. I think we saw that in the Molly Tibbetts case. Her family was out there in ditches. They were out there in cornfields. They were doing everything they could. And it was not Chris Watts who started the ball rolling on any of the investigation. Instead, this guy calmly goes to work. He works a full day, and he just sits there, and he's monitoring the Ring video from the front door, which is really interesting because for those who don't know what it is, it's a kind of apparatus that when someone comes to your door and it detects movement, or if they ring the doorbell, it detects that, starts to videotape, and you can get that signal on your cell phone or your computer and see what's going on at the front door. So there he is at work. And he claims, well, I texted her three times. I called her about three times. He says this in a few interviews, which is going to be amazing when the jury hears those phone calls and reads those text messages, knowing that this guy knew that his kids were dead. He claims that he just suffered this horrific Greek tragedy of watching his wife strangle them to death. He loses his mind, and then he strangles her. And he's sitting there the very hours later, calmly texting her, hey, babe, how you doing? Give me a call. We're going to see what that looks like. And then he sees on the Ring video, according to his own statements, that her friend comes to the door. What does he do? He calls the friend. What's going on? What's happening? Well, I can't find her. She was supposed to come to an appointment, a doctor's appointment. You know, what's going on? This is the only time we see real emotion in Chris Watts in this whole thing. He says, I knew then that something was wrong, and I got in my car, and I ran, blew through red lights, and my heart was beating fast. And I believe that because his emotion was, oh, shit. Now someone's shown up at the door who wasn't supposed to be there, and this is it. And everyone on Web Sleuth is talking about this gal who's been on the media, Nicole. Her friend who went with her on the trip to Arizona, saw her in the door at around 1:48 a.m. and then couldn't get a hold of her the next day. And she was relentless. She knew something was wrong. She banged on that door. I think she had a key because she talks about opening it, and then there's a latch on the inside so she couldn't get in. And she's freaking out. And Chris Watts is saying, well, you know, she had a play date. I don't know with
just who. Just kind of being all lackadaisical all about it. Just, oh, well, whatever,
That's as just this friend,
it's
this
unbelievable.
Friend. Yeah, and the friend is freaking out. It is the friend who called the police to make a welfare check. It wasn't mm-hmm. the husband who
God,
has a pregnant
awful.
Wife. She's 15 weeks pregnant. She's been mm-hmm. complaining of feeling a little bit ill. Two small children. You can't get a hold of them. The car is in the garage, and you're not flipping out going, whoa, what's going mm-hmm. on? I mean, any normal husband
yeah, you would
be
flipping.
Think something right. So that's very telling that, you know, as Levi said, he wasn't doing
it
anything
is.
That a concerned husband and father would be doing. And frankly, he wasn't doing anything that a man who just watched his wife murder his children would have done. He was stone cold calm until he saw that Nicole was mm-hmm. there at 12 p.m. and was calling the cops.
That's it. And Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, you had a thought and I interrupted you. What was your thought, my dear?
No, this is perfect. Everything she said is right on the money. And here's the
mm-hmm.
thing. It kind of reminds me of Jeffrey McDonald. Here you've got a pregnant wife and two young girls.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The order in which these people were killed is going to matter a lot in front of that jury. Because chances
How come?
Are... the babies were asleep, or he killed them before she ever got home. And that's a very different story. So
how will they be able to prove that, do you think?
Well, again, they're going to look at that during the autopsy to see if they can show, you know, time of death. They've already said it was at least Monday, right? But we're already at 2
right.
a.m. before she gets in the house. So what I'm saying is they're having this emotional talk, he says. At what point is the wife killed,
mm-hmm.
right? Because his story is he walks out of the room for 2 minutes and for no reason she starts killing everybody, which you know makes no sense at all, right? I mean, she comes
right.
home from a work trip and, you know. So what do you do after you've been out of town for a long time with a 3- and a 4-year-old? You're going to go to that room immediately and kiss mm-hmm. him on the head and just sit on the bed and be with him because you've missed them so much, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he's already killed them. He has no choice but to attack her immediately. He has no choice.
Yes.
The reason I say, again, whatever they found in the trash can on those pillowcases is clear. Because he had to, you know, stop her somehow from being able to call the police or do anything else. So by 5 o'clock, he's already got them wrapped in sheets, in the truck, headed to dispose of them at his workplace. So,
mm-hmm.
again... he's laid it out for you. He's told you. And another thing that I find very interesting is that in every single conference that he gave, every single talk he's given, not once does he mention concern for the unborn child or really truly where they are. He talks about, oh, I can't be in this house again. Oh, I'm so lonely. Oh, I don't like this. He talks about himself a whole lot, but he
mm-hmm.
doesn't talk about where logically they could be. And he talks about everybody else making phone calls and everybody looking for her and, you know, who knows where she could be. But he has no answers. And he doesn't seem to be particularly upset. He's not
right.
fine. Mm-hmm. I think everybody has heard at one point Nancy Grace talk about the time she lost John David for, I don't know, 2 minutes.
2 minutes,
and she became
yeah.
a complete crazy
yeah.
person. She made
mm-hmm.
she made him lock all the doors. She's practically doing an Amber Alert. I mean, he was right there hiding. Like little children can do. Can you imagine all night
no.
long goes by and you still have
I would
no
be
answers
hysterical.
To sit out in front of your house? Of course. And he's just
oh,
like,
God,
well,
I'd be out of control.
I don't know. I don't have any idea.
Yeah, and that, you know, again, he's trying to act like what he thinks a person that feels something acts like is what it looks like to me.
Absolutely correct.
And, yeah, and Levi Page, I know you have some very, very strong feelings about this, but let's talk about the makeup of the marriage. Everybody seems to say that it was a very happy marriage, but that Shanann was the more kind of the leader. And I'm not saying that in a negative way whatsoever, but she was the planner, the one that kind of got things done, and Chris followed her lead. That's what people are indicating. Now, whether that's the actual truth or not, we don't know yet. But Levi, what have you read and what's your opinion on the marriage?
Well, you know, oftentimes, you know, unless you're living with someone, you do not get a full picture of what a marriage is about. And how many times have we seen where we see people that think that we think that they have the perfect marriage, but really they're having financial problems. you know, there's affairs going on and things of that nature. So that doesn't surprise me. What I'm going to be very interested in is this guy's computer and his cell phone and any mobile devices, on what kind of information they're going to get on those devices. It, you know, Tinder. Was he, you know, trolling Tinder for women? Was he still active on Tinder when his children were missing? In reality, he killed them. If he was still active and trolling around on Tinder and doing stuff like that, that is really going to hurt him. And police are going to have access to his telephone, and they're going to be able to get this information, and they're going to be able to show that this was, you know, not a perfect marriage, that there were problems in the marriage, and there was even a mistress that he has that has come out and said that he did some very kinky things, that he liked to choke her, that he had rape fantasies. So that right there tells you that he's not normal, that there are, that he has some issues, and that tells you that this is not the perfect family man. And we're going to, I can guarantee you that there's going to be more information coming out about what sort of weirdo this guy is in the coming days as police get information on his mobile devices. It's going to come out.
Can I jump in there? Because there's this is a really interesting thing. If we look at the Ross Harris case where he killed his child by putting the child in the in a car and pretending that he forgot, he was found guilty for that. That's exactly what they found. And I'm very, very also interested, especially with Levi bringing it up, what they're going to find. What we know so far is that according to the affidavit, they have confirmed he was having an affair. And I think it's clear to at least one affair. It, maybe they haven't confirmed the stuff about the possible male partner and these other people who are popping up and talking about kinky sex. But we have seen this time and time again in these cases of family annihilators. And this is what – these cases are so mind-blowing, and they freak people out so badly, because here we have a beautiful family. You've got two attractive parents, gorgeous kids, this gorgeous house in Colorado. I mean, just you know, a wonderful house. And they're living the American dream. This is a family that's living what everyone wants to happen, to have. And then something horrible happens. Wife and kids just disappear. And so it really just defies logic. And I think it's the kind of case that grips America so much because they did look so normal and so happy for the most part. And it's kind of this thought that, wait a minute, if something terrible can happen to that family, it can happen to anyone. And people don't like that thought. Am I sleeping with the enemy? Is my husband or wife, you know, are they capable of doing something or having a secret life? But when you look at these cases of family annihilators, because I keep seeing this on Web Sleuth and also elsewhere, I can't believe this happened. Maybe, you know, his story is right. I can't see it. You know, I see these beautiful pictures of him with the children, with his wife, videos. He seems loving. There's no way that this man could have just done this. But time after time with these family annihilator cases, it fits the pattern perfectly. They have a secret life that they're not talking about, like Chris Coleman had this whole affair. They almost always come across as really good family men, devoted fathers, loving husbands. And so it almost always comes out of the blue. I mean, you can look at case after case. Chris Coleman, there's a whole list that people have compiled of these family annihilators. Christian Longo, they seem like wonderful family men, and then all of a sudden they're not. And people are really, really trying to understand. And it is very, very typical that what you find is exactly what Levi just said. They have this whole secret life that indicates that everything they were portraying was an act, which seems really hard for us to believe because it looks so real, but it was an act.
Right.
They're faking it. And underneath the surface, they're not happy with this. They want to be free. They want to be, and you know, you see some of this. If it's true that he was involved in this kind of kinky sex stuff or multiple partners of different sexes and kind of doing it, it also fits the pattern of some of these more psychopathic or sociopathic perpetrators like Ross Harris, who they're always trying to escalate the excitement level because they have a hard time feeling
sex.
It.
Right,
not just
right.
sex, but you know, the choking, violence, whatever it is, trying to get caught. You know, they if he is, and I'm not a psychologist, but if he's a typical kind of sociopathic person, they have a high, I think, a physiological threshold for stress. So they don't feel stress, they don't feel excitement as easily as other people. Everything's kind of dull, and so they keep upping the ante with more and more risk behaviors. And we see that with these family annihilators, that it is uncovered eventually. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really interesting to see what comes out in the trial.
It will be, and I have a feeling we're going to learn a lot more before the trial. Hey, we do have some callers, so is everybody up for taking some questions? Everyone?
Yes, ma'am.
Everyone okay? Okay.
Absolutely.
We're going to do this right now. I'm going to call out your area code. If I call out your area code, that means you are live on the air. This is area code 828. Now, area code 828 has been waiting since the second we started. Area code 828. Can you hear me? Oh, they hung up. Well, okay.
No.
How about if we go to area code 856? 856, you've been holding on for a long time. 856, are you there? Area code 856? Hello? I've got you live. 856. Area code 856. I can sing. That'll really drive them away. Okay, well, we'll put 856 back on hold. And let's try area code 240. 240. Can you hear me? Area code 240. Bueller? Bueller? Anyone? Okay, well, we'll put that back on hold. And maybe we won't be taking calls. Let's try this other one. We'll try one more here. And this is area code 402. Area code 402. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Hello?
Yay. Yay.
Yay.
Okay.
Okay.
We've got a caller, but go ahead. What is your question or comment?
Okay. Well, I really wasn't thinking of having a question. I jumped in a little late, but I'd like to get the impression, I do have this burning question inside, I'd like to ask the question whether you guys think that this was planned very far in advance, the murders, and who may have been killed first.
Let's start with Levi Page, we'll go to Cheryl McCollum, and then we'll go to Hitana One, and let's get your opinions. Levi, do you think this was planned ahead, and who do you think died first? Thank you, caller. Thank you. I'll put you back on hold so you can listen, okay?
Sure. Thank you.
Well, you know, I think that this could have been brewing for some time, Tricia, because I was reading that she had actually gotten a very good job that paid about $80,000 a year, that she had a Lexus, a company vehicle that she was driving around and had gotten trips paid for to Mexico, and I think maybe that could have hurt his ego, so there was maybe some building resentment that was building up in him, and that this could have been something that was brewing for some time. I'm interested to see what everybody else has to say about that.
Cheryl McCollum, Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, our dear friend, what do you think? When was this planned, and who died first?
I do believe that he had it brewing. I think that's a good way to put it. I think that he might have even fantasized about, man, if they weren't here, you know, I could be free to do all these things. I also think Levi's absolutely right that his social media and his internet searches are going to tell us a whole lot. And more than Tinder, I think we're going to see some things like Plenty of Fish and Backpage. I think some of his stuff, he wanted a sure thing. And that's, you know, just dragged out a lot of his fantasies. When we talk about somebody that had affairs, I think that's going to be really prevalent as well, because you're talking about somebody that can lie and con and hurt people and embarrass people and potentially do harm. Well, that, again, he's textbook case of that. And who mm-hmm. I think died first. Honestly, I think the children died first. I hate to say it, but that's what I honestly think. If he had killed her, he could have disposed of her body and claimed she ran off with somebody. He did not have to kill the children if that was the case.
Right.
So the children were either to really, truly torture her and get at her in the worst possible way, or he just mm-hmm. completely panicked and killed everybody. But again, I think the order is going to be extremely important, and I think they're going to be able to zero in on that.
And let's go to Hitana One, our wonderful verified attorney on Web Sleuth. What do you think? Who died first, and was this in the making, in the planning for quite some time, or it just happened?
I think either theory has some viability, but I lean very strongly to premeditation. I don't mm-hmm. know how far in advance. I agree with Levi that this was brewing with both and Cheryl. I think it was brewing, but this is what makes me think that not only was it premeditated, but probably also the kids were killed first. One was mm-hmm. the fact that when it comes to the kids, the flight, Shanann's flight was delayed. And mm-hmm. I think that actually put a lot of pressure on him. I have a feeling that he probably killed the kids first, expected her home early enough that he could stage, he could do various things, and then there was mm-hmm. just panic. Because what yep. people keep bringing up is that, you know, he did these things. Like, he put the sheets in the trash can, and he left the bar in the slider and the latches so that there really was no way she could get out of that house except the one entrance, the garage that was covered by a camera. What kind of idiot does that? It must have been a sudden rage kind of thing and not planned. I disagree with that a little bit. I mean, I'm not discounting it, but I disagree because mm-hmm. I think that it was really the timing, that the fact that the flight was delayed really was the cause of, oh, shoot, you know, I see this scenario of her texting him or calling him saying, sorry, it's delayed, and he's sitting there with these two little dead bodies, which mm-hmm. makes me choke up a little bit, you know, and he's sitting there panicking, oh, no. What am I going to do? If she's delayed until tomorrow, she's going to be calling and saying, hey, how are you going to get them to school? Let me say good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Now what?
Yep.
But
yep.
the reason that I think that I lean more towards premeditation is really his reactions after the fact. Because I've been following these kind of horrible, violent cases for decades. And I have mm-hmm. seen cases where there are these sudden rage attacks or somebody loses their mind. I brought up Julie Scheneker, who shot Calix and Beau. And you can really, they fit certain patterns, these sort of lose it or snapped kind of cases. And mm-hmm. you see the person typically, they confess right away. They call 911. They're on the lawn screaming, oh, my God, what did I do? Or, you know, they show signs of some kind of mental illness. They're not great at trying to conceal. We saw no signs. And, again, I'm not a professional, but I have mm-hmm. had, in the context of my court cases and an acquaintance, some experience with psychosis, including brief mm-hmm. reactive psychosis. And with
that,
you see a kind of brief reactive psychosis is where, due to an intensive stressor and some other issues, maybe things like the person has a propensity for it, they could have a bipolar disorder, whatever, but they usually experience some kind of significant loss or some kind of shock, and they lose it. And
mm-hmm.
But what happens, it's not that quick. There's this pre-phase where they act extremely withdrawn. They're very quiet. They may exhibit delusional speech. You can see signs. They start kind of talking about strange things, like they think somebody's on their computer watching them. And by all accounts, the Sunday before the murders, he was at this barbecue with the kids, and he was acting totally normal. Then after a brief reactive psychosis commences, you don't snap in and out of it. You lose your mind, and it lasts for a long, long time, typically days or weeks, where they have to give them medication, put them in the hospital, and you can see strange body movements. The eyes are moving back and forth. You know, there's a lot of tells. There's speech patterns are weird. And you can see the video of Julie Schenecker after she was arrested for murdering her kid, and you can see exactly what that's like. It's very, very apparent. And then we juxtapose that with Chris Watts standing there, smiling, talking, calm, on the porch the day after he supposedly saw his wife strangling his kids, if we go with that theory, or he lost it and killed everybody, but it wasn't premeditated. He just became enraged.
Tricia, and can I add something?
Yes, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, what do you think about the fact that with her, like, business that she was involved in, I think it was, like, health supplements that she promoted and sold, they had, like, perks where if you sold so much, you would get, like, a company car, and they would also send you on, like, all-expense-paid trips to, like, Mexico, New Orleans. She went to a lot of great places, and she was the one that went, and sometimes Chris Watts went with her, but a lot of times he would stay back home with the kids. And I'm just wondering if he was, you know, angry that she's having all of this success, that he has to stay home with the kids while she goes on these trips and has fun. And this rage builds up inside of him. And that's what made him get really angry and kill the kids and then kill her. Why am I the one that is, you know, we had financial difficulties, we had to go through bankruptcy, now she's having this, you know, major success in her life, and why am I the one that has to stay back home and take care of the kids while she goes on all of these, you know, fun vacations without me? And I'm wondering, do you think that factored into this killing, and that might be why he was, you know, having an affair, because he really resented her and her success.
Hey, Donna, what do you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and there's been a lot of discussion sort of on the boards about how he was this quiet guy, and she may have been, you know, sort of the outgoing and maybe a little bit emasculating at times. And, you know, I don't agree that she was that way, but I can see how he might feel that. And I do see, though, that he went on most of these trips, and the grandfather would come and babysit. He didn't go on this 6-week trip that she went on with the kids. He only, I think, went for the last week to back home to North Carolina. And that's interesting to a lot of people. It might indicate some marital problems. Some people handle that kind of separation in a marriage, but a lot of people really don't. I think I have a lot to say about this. I don't want to take up all the time talking myself, but, you know, he seems like a little bit more of an introverted person. She was definitely an extrovert. But he did seem like someone who, you know, people point out, wait, you know, it looks like maybe she's forcing him to be on the camera. We don't have the benefit of his own social media, his Facebook, because conveniently he erased it a week before the murders. But one of the insiders, I think, who knew the family, I think it might have been Isalabra, but I'm not sure, stated that she saw his Facebook as well, and it was similar, Thrive stuff and promoting the family. And I do notice that in a lot of these videos, you'll see him kind of pop in and make sure his face is there. But from all accounts, from his high school shop teacher who had some glowing things to say about him, and from a friend who was interviewed or talked on Facebook, I'm not sure, who went to school with him, both of them kind of characterized him as a withdrawn, quiet person who wasn't, you know, girls liked him in high school, but he didn't really act on it. And there's kind of this sense that maybe he started to come into his own. He started getting into shape more. He started really
working
getting
out.
Off and looking better. But at the same time, his wife, you know, she is this shining person. She, you know, she has so many friends, very close friends. She was very involved with her friends and family. You see some of these videos where she's talking about she wakes up in the morning and all her friends from North Carolina are sending her good morning texts. That's not an unlikable person. You know, that's someone who's really outgoing. And I noticed that there's really not a lot of talk of Chris Watts' friends. His friends seem to be her friend's spouses, which
exactly.
points to kind of a, yeah. And so I do think that there could be this resentment that was building toward her. One poster pointed something. There's a video of him and her. She was actually taking video of a bunch of people dancing. And he's in the background,
mm-hmm.
and he's standing in profile, and he's turning sideways looking at her. And what this poster stated just drilled into my head as reality. They said, my husband used to stare at me the very same way when we were in public, and he was a secret abuser. And when we got home, he would come after me for being laughing too loud and being too friendly. And when you look at that video, you kind of get that sense. But
mm-hmm.
what turns me from a real burst of rage to more of a simmering resentment and hatred that turned into a cold and calculated, I'm getting rid of this family. They are a shackle
mm-hmm.
for me. What is the deciding factor for me in that is the way he acted in those interviews afterwards, the way he
mm-hmm.
was so calm, no grief, knowing that his family was dead and, you know, that maybe he would have lost it. There were no signs of continued rage, really. You know, he snapped out of that so quickly. And then it was this absolutely horrific accusation that his dead wife, who we know he murdered because he confessed, that she's the one who killed her precious babies. And I really think that shows, that is so coldly sociopathic. I'm not an expert, but that's my opinion, that someone who would put that out there, not only for Shanann, for her memory, but for her poor family, to
yeah.
have her name besmirched, that's an evil person who does that. And I think that it goes a level beyond rage.
Good point.
And
yeah.
Very good point. Cheryl McCollum, you've had experience. You know all these cases from all through the years. Is this somebody that just simmered for years and then finally blew up? Or, like you said earlier, you just don't, you know, go crazy when you turn 34. What do you think?
I think that in his background, he either harmed animals for fun, or if
mm-hmm.
somebody got hurt, he thought it was funny. I think he's always been quick to anger. Do I think he's a con artist? Absolutely. I mean, he's probably
mm-hmm.
got friends that literally are in shock right now because they only know him as a nice guy, or you just didn't see this coming. But that's part of it. That's what these
mm-hmm.
folks are so extraordinarily gifted at. That is fooling you. And I say to people all the time, forget the devil in the details. The devil is at your dinner table. These are people you know. These are people you
yes.
have slept with. These are people that you marry and have children with. And you're
mm-hmm.
still caught off guard, even though there are signs. Yes, they've been bankrupt. Yes, their HOA is going after them. Yes, he's having an affair. What more do we need to go, you know what? This is brewing. Something's percolating,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to have a real problem in a minute. People are killed over money all the time. They're killed
mm-hmm.
over sex all the time. They're killed for revenge all the time. This is 101, what you're looking at. This is it. You want to know what revenge looks like? This is it.
This is it. I think you're all right. You all make great points, and we'll be able to obviously find out in the coming months. Now, we do have another caller with a question. And this caller, I believe, is calling on, where'd he go? Oh, don't tell me he hung up or she hung up. Hold on. Let me see. Oh, I think we did have the caller hang up. That's too bad. So anyway, I'm sure the caller was going to say, I love this show and your guests are so wonderful. And Tricia, you're so smart and great. And I adore you all. I think that's what he was going to say. Anyway, I'll tell you what, I know everybody is giving up their evening for me, and I really appreciate it. Let's just go around the table for some final thoughts, and then we'll call it a night until next time. And let's start with our verified attorney on Web Sleuth, very popular, much-loved poster who participates, and every time she posts something, I got to read it because it's always fascinating. Hitana One, let's hear your final thoughts on Chris Watts killing his family.
Oh, my gosh. And I hope I won't get emotional about this because I think it is. You know, when I saw Shanann's family reacting, if you juxtapose the photos of her father and her brother in that courtroom, and you see their eyes, just the bags and the brilliant red eyes, the grief is so intense, and you juxtapose that with that cold murderer who stood there on that porch, gave three interviews, showed off his shirt as he knew his babies were dead. He knew that they were swirling, rotting in two separate oil vats. And he sat there and he smiled and he showed almost no emotion for that. Juxtapose that. And then think about what's happening now. I truly believe that the defense is strategizing. And I think that one of those strategies is to get friends and family that side with Chris to start dropping bombs out there in social media, on different forums, to kind of cast aspersions on Shanann's character. And nobody is perfect. I'm sure that lady had a lot of flaws like we all do if you were to look at our families and look at our lives. But what I have determined in looking at this and looking at his allegations and what's coming out now, this criticism of this poor woman who lost everything. Everything was taken from her. Her babies, the very breath out of her body was taken. And she is being slaughtered online. Her character is being slaughtered. And what scares me about that is what's to come in trial.
There you
and
go.
I now predict absolute horror show of a trial. And the reason, because I believe that eventually, whether we have a hung jury or two, he's going to be found guilty. But what horrifies me about this is her family and their ability, because I've gone through something, their ability to withstand that kind of torment. I don't see those poor people coping, and that breaks my heart.
It is tragic and unfair, and maybe he'll do the right thing and plead guilty or not have a trial, but probably not. Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, my dear, your final thoughts on Chris Watts and this case.
I think he belongs in the category of Dr. McDonald and Dr. Sam Shepard and Scott Peterson and the rest of them. These are people that they were not the life of the party. None of those men were, you know, extraordinarily social and gifted and outgoing, but their wives were. But they were seemingly in a successful, happy, perfect marriage of attractive, you know, well-to-do type folks. But that's the con. And again, the devil comes in disguise all the time. And we comfort ourselves by saying, well, you just didn't see that coming. Mm-hmm. Yes, you did. You missed it, but it was there. The clues were there. The anger, the control, the money, the jealousy, the fits of rage in private, they were there. If you think about what he says, he said, I'll tell you the truth after I talk to my dad. Okay, you're still trying to call shots, you piece of crap? Really? What can your dad do for you now? But not your mom, not a woman, but my dad. Because that's the person that's been saving him since he was 5 years old.
Yeah. The dad might hold the key to his personality. Thank you, Cheryl. Levi Page from Crime and Scandal Podcast. We'll let you have the last word. And we actually do have one more question. If everybody can hang on after Levi, I'd like to get to that question. So anyway, go ahead, Levi. What are your final thoughts?
Well, you know, I'd just like to piggyback off of what was said earlier about how evil it was for this man to accuse his wife, a murder victim, of killing her own children, and that's why he had to kill her. And the fact that her family has to hear that and hear her name dragged through the mud after she's been brutally murdered, I think that that shows you how evil that this man is, and that there's no depth of evil that he will not stoop to, that he has to even victimize her even after he kills her. And I think that that speaks volumes about his lack of character, lack of morals, lack of conscience, and it shows you that this guy may even plead not guilty and even take this to trial and try to argue some ridiculous BS defense that everybody else is going to laugh at. We all laugh at it. But, you know, sometimes jurors, when they see someone that it looks like, you know, the guy next door, someone that's good-looking, that's smiling in photographs with their wife and their kids, and there's people that say good things about him. Oh, you know, he worked on cars, and any time I needed him, he came over to work on vehicles. Juries fall for that. And I remember after the Casey Anthony case that there were jurors that said that they found her not guilty because they said there was no evidence that she had ever abused Kaylee before she died. And we don't want to believe it. And when you look at all the photos, she's smiling and she looks like a normal young woman that has a child. Juries buy into that. Juries are not like us that follow all the details of the case once the person goes missing to when the body's found, from when they're charged, and we follow all the legal proceedings. And they don't have other cases of reference like we do. We've seen this all before play out in other cases. We know how these people operate. And jurors fall for that. And I hope that doesn't happen. But I'm very skeptical.
It very well could.
And cynical.
That's an, as you should be. Yes, Cheryl McCollum.
I was trying to put something together so that we could go and sit and talk to the prosecutor and put a case in front of them. I would lead with the fact that he admitted to killing his wife. Thereby, he admitted to killing his unborn child.
Oh, there you go.
That. You killed a child, too. You killed your own child. So take that off the table, that that's going to, you know, be a deciding factor. He did the exact same thing.
There you go. That really could be the key, and I hope they take your thought, Cheryl McCollum, because it's a good one, and we just got to put our faith in the system this time. We'll have to wait and see. We do have a caller, and I believe this caller is probably using Skype because it's just all ones, just 1111111. So let's see. Let me get the caller. There we go. Caller, can you hear me? Hello? Nobody loves me. Nobody loves me. Okay, well, they hung up as soon as they heard my voice. I've had that happen a million times, so it tends to happen a lot. They hear my voice, people panic, and they run. Anyway, Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. Yes, Levi, were you going to say something? Levi? Where did Levi go?
Did we lose?
I'm here. I don't have anything.
Are you there, Levi?
For once.
Oh, okay. I thought you were. That's okay. I thought you were trying to interrupt there. Anyway, let's again, ladies and gentlemen, I do appreciate you giving us your time this evening. Everybody has busy lives. Don't forget to go to websleuth.com. We do have a Watts thread that is very active and very interesting. We do have some verified insiders on that thread that are discussing things that they know that you won't read in the newspapers or watch on television. But we encourage everybody to come to Web Sleuth because here's the thing. You don't have to worry about bullies on Web Sleuth. You don't have to worry about people calling you names. We are tightly moderated, and anybody that starts to pull that kind of garbage, they're gone. So Web Sleuth is an easy forum to join in, and we want everybody to join in. We welcome all people, all types of opinions. That's websleuth.com, and a perfect example of one of our members, I'd like to thank Hitana One for joining us tonight, our verified attorney. Thank you, my dear, and you did so great. I'm telling you, I'm going to have you on a lot, so sorry.
Well,
you can't
thank
avoid
you.
It.
I appreciate the opportunity. It was really enjoyable. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. And Cheryl McCollum, anything you want to say about the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute tonight?
Well, I tell you, we just kicked off a brand new case of Honey Malone, and that's the big news right now, that we went on scene and we actually walked the path that she took. We did it in the rain. We did it through the cut. We did it in a little bit of a dangerous area. So we had a great time, and her family is extraordinary, and maybe we can have them and join you and have Web Sleuths help on it.
I would be glad to. We would be glad to. And you can find the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute on Facebook, and that's where you can find Cheryl McCollum and Levi Page. What's coming up on your podcast, Crime and Scandal? Bueller? Levi? he dropped. He left. Again,
I
annoy people.
He's had some extraordinary guests lately. His show has just been popping, and he's got, I mean, hundreds of thousands of downloads. He's just been killing it, so to speak, here lately.
he's been doing great. In fact, I think he's up to 1 million downloads. So all you need to do is Google Crime and Scandal podcast, and it will come up. And anytime Levi Page has a show, it's one you don't want to miss. So thank you, Levi. Thank you, ladies. We'll be with you again soon on our next edition of Web Sleuths Radio. And remember, everybody, I do not want you to become a topic of a thread on Web Sleuths. So stay out of trouble. Be good. Although it would be interesting, but, you know, just be safe, be good, and we'll talk to you next time. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you.